Headlines: Lebanon says it has filed a complaint with the UN against Israel for its repeated violations of Lebanese airspace. The UN warns that one-third of Afghanistan's population, equivalent to 14 million people, are at risk of severe or acute hunger as the result of war and drought. Vietnam will deploy troops in Ho Chi Minh City and prohibit residents from leaving their homes as the city seeks to slow a spiraling coronavirus death rate. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour: Lebanon says that it has filed a complaint with the UN against Israel for its repeated violations of Lebanese airspace. Lebanon's foreign ministry said Israeli actions pose a threat to security and stability of Lebanon and violate UN Security Council resolutions. This comes after Israeli warplanes shot missiles towards Syria using Lebanese sky. Separately, Syria called on the UN to fulfill its responsibility by taking firm measures to prevent more Israeli attacks against the country. Damascus also called on the world body to hold the Israeli regime accountable for, quote, its terrorist and criminal actions. The Syrian army said the attack targeted security posts near Damascus and homes. The army said, however, that it shot down most of the incoming missiles. Lebanon is in the midst of a deepening crisis. A political stalemate and a financial meltdown have made life extremely difficult for the Lebanese people. A severe shortage of fuel is making things much worse.
Lebanon seems to be on the brink of an abyss as it grapples with a prolonged double crisis. Lebanon has been plagued by a political vacuum as politicians fail to agree on a government, while a devastating economic meltdown has become an existential threat. The situation has been widely described as the worst in Lebanon's history, with some warning that time is running out fast for those who wish to save the country. Lebanon has been without a government for a year now. The last government resigned in August 2020, days after a massive chemical blast destroyed much of the port of Beirut. The financial crisis has seen the Lebanese pound sink by more than 90% and pushed more than half of the population into poverty. The Lebanese Central Bank recently scrapped a fuel subsidy due to lack of funds. Lebanon is right now suffering from a painful fuel shortage that has caused long lines at petrol stations and worsened blackouts.
The current situation in Lebanon has become unbearable for a large part of the population. There is barely any fuel left in the country, which has led to a severe shortage of electricity to an extent that it has disrupted people's everyday lives and affected many. To an extent that even hospitals are at the brink of a collapse, and the access of electricity has become so scarce that it is a humanitarian tragedy.
Last week, over two dozen people were killed when a fuel tanker exploded as people scrambled to fill gasoline in plastic containers. There have been warnings that the fuel crisis may soon force hospitals, bakeries, and other essential facilities to shut down. The grave situation has become a serious threat to the nation. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has begun acting in a bid to resolve the crisis.
Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has begun importing fuel from Iran in a bid to overcome the crisis. Hezbollah's Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah says the Iranians have assured him that they will stand by the Lebanese people in this crisis.
Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah has warned against any effort to block the transfer of Iranian fuel to Lebanon. Nasrallah has warned Israel and the U.S. to stay away from ships carrying the much-needed fuel for Lebanon. The Hezbollah chief says the tankers coming to Lebanon from Iran are Lebanese territory. The resistance movement has been a key player in Lebanese politics for many years and has gained popularity for its stance against Israel. The movement is very much despised by the West, especially the U.S., which is the closest ally of Israel. Western countries have imposed sanctions on Lebanon in a bid to limit Hezbollah's influence. The sanctions have played a major role in triggering the current financial meltdown. The resistance movement's ongoing effort to ease economic hardship in Lebanon will probably improve the situation to some extent. But observers believe any effective solution for the crisis needs cooperation by all Lebanese political parties. This week, Lebanese President Michel Aoun and Prime Minister-designate Najib Mikati expressed optimism that a government could soon be formed. But on Thursday, Aoun said certain parties are blocking the formation of a new cabinet to push the country into chaos. Lebanon seems to need a competent government more than anything else at this point. Any further delay in forming a new government could have devastating consequences.
Elsewhere, the World Food Program has warned that one-third of Afghanistan's population are at risk of severe or acute hunger due to war and drought. The WFP country director for Afghanistan said the dire condition threatens 14 million people in the country, while 2 million children are at risk of malnutrition. Mary Ellen McGroarty added that 2021 is an extraordinarily difficult year as a horrendous humanitarian crisis unfolds in the war-torn country. Wheat production has plummeted 40% in Afghanistan after one of the driest spells in almost three decades. McGroarty said this has also had a devastating impact on livestock. Moreover, she added that escalating conflict across the country has forced the farmers from their homes and prevented them from harvesting their land. A NATO official says more than 18,000 people have been evacuated from Kabul airport since the Taliban took over Afghanistan's capital on Sunday. The official said the majority of the evacuees are diplomats, foreign nationals, and military personnel. At the same time, people desperate to flee continue to throng outside the airport. That's according to the same NATO official who declined to be named. NATO and U.S. troops have secured Karzai International Airport and cleared the runway after chaotic scenes over the weekend. 12 people have been killed in and around Kabul airport since Sunday. The Taliban are blocking Afghans without travel documents from entering the airport. But even those with valid papers have struggled to get there, with reports saying some have been beaten by Taliban guards. Well, in the wake of the recent developments in Afghanistan, Iran has seen an unabated flow of Afghan refugees. This as the situation has sparked fears of a possible overflow of insecurity into Iran. Yusuf Jalali was there and filed this report from the Iranian-Afghan border.
On the other side of Milak crossing point in east of Iran, the Taliban have taken down the Afghan flag and raised their own white flag, a move that represents their control of Afghan borders. This has given Iranians the jitters that Afghanistan's insecurity might spill into Iran. Since the conflict erupted in Afghanistan, Iran's border police have deployed more forces to its eastern borders to beef up security. Iran's border police say they constantly monitor the frontier and are ready to confront any hostile action along the border.
As you see, security is fully ensured here on our borders, and transit between the two countries is ongoing. Any suspicious movement along the border is monitored and will be nipped in the bud by our armed forces.
Over the past days, Iran's eastern border has been buzzing with Afghan refugees or escaping from an uncertain future under the Taliban, who have now taken full control of the country after the central government collapse. The majority of the fleeing Afghans have climbed a 50-kilometer concrete wall topped with barbed wire Iran erected more than a decade ago to block drug smuggling.
We embraced all the hardship and dangers to get to Iran. We walked for 4 days to get here.
I urge Iranian officials to let us stay here. In our country, there's no hope for peace and security. Otherwise, I wouldn't have left my homeland.
Iran's border police say they will peacefully return refugees who have made irregular crossings. Meanwhile, Iran has set up makeshift camps along the border to temporarily accommodate the inbound refugees.
Based on religious teaching, we feel bound to serve our Afghan brothers and sisters who have sought refuge in our country. The Iranian armed forces accommodated them and provided them with food and medicine, and we hope they will find peace when they go back to their homeland.
Turkey has been building a 240-kilometer wall along its frontier with Iran to push back the fleeing Afghans. Last week, Pakistan has clashed with Afghan refugees at its border to hold them out, while Iran says it has been acting as a shield that limits the flow of Afghan migrants toward Turkey and Europe. It believes the situation cannot be solved with force, and collective measures need to be taken by world leaders to avert a refugee crisis.
Well, on the other side of this bridge, the conflict almost subsided. The influx of Afghan refugees still goes on. Iran's border police say they will continue to shelter Afghan refugees, hoping that Afghanistan will soon be a safe place for its people. Yusuf Jalali from Milak Crossing Point on the Iranian-Afghan border.
Turkey says it will act in coordination with the international community in its stance on the recognition of the new government in Afghanistan. Thrashen Sagan reports from Istanbul.
Turkey says it will decide on Taliban's government recognition after it is formed. Turkish foreign minister said Ankara will not rush into recognizing a Taliban government in Afghanistan as it is still too early for this step.
We are keeping up dialogue with all sides, including the Taliban. We view positively the messages that the Taliban have given so far, whether to foreigners, diplomatic individuals, or its own people. We hope to see these in action as well.
In response to a question regarding Turkey's contact with the Taliban, Çavuşoğlu said Turkey had invited the political wing of the Taliban to Turkey before they had entered Kabul. Earlier, Turkish security sources said Ankara had dropped plans to guard and operate Kabul's airport after the withdrawal of NATO forces from Afghanistan, following footage and reports of chaos taking place there after Taliban's takeover. Turkey says its offer to provide technical and security assistance at the Kabul airport will be further discussed with the U.S.
Turkey will follow the lead of other countries in recognizing a Taliban government in Afghanistan. If the U.S. and EU countries recognize a government formed by Taliban, Turkey will follow in their footsteps. However, I don't think that Turkey will consider the Taliban government as a strategic partner in the region. We expect a delegation from the Taliban to visit Turkey for talks over the transition phase, just like it is taking place with other countries in the region.
The Turkish president had announced last week his readiness to meet with the Taliban leadership. Turkey says so far the Taliban is sending positive messages, hoping that it will be followed with positive actions as well. Turkey is now concerned about the refugee influx it is going to have after Taliban's takeover in Afghanistan. This comes as it has been struggling to revive the economic situation in the country with a handful of refugees already there amid the coronavirus pandemic. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
The COVID-19 pandemic continues to take its toll on Asia, with a number of countries reporting new infections and related fatalities. The Philippines has reported over 17,000 new cases, the highest daily tally since the pandemic began. Health authorities also logged 317 more deaths in the same period. In Thailand, the number of confirmed cases has surpassed the grim milestone of 1 million, after officials logged nearly 20,000 more infections. Elsewhere in Asia, Vietnam also reported 390 new deaths and over 10,000 infections. The government is set to deploy troops in its biggest city, Ho Chi Minh City, prohibited residents from leaving their homes as a business hub has turned into an epicenter of the virus outbreak. Iran has logged nearly 29,000 new COVID-19 infections, pushing the country's overall caseload to more than 4.6 million. The health ministry also confirmed 555 new COVID-related deaths for the past day. The country's death tally is now inching closer to 101,000. Iran has been in the grip of the fifth wave of the pandemic since late June. The uptick is largely blamed on the Delta variant of the virus and people's disregard for health guidelines. Authorities have tightened COVID restrictions to bring the surge under control. The country has been under a six-day general lockdown, which will end Saturday. All government offices, banks, and non-essential businesses are closed. A ban on road travel has also been in place for a week now. Authorities have also speeded up the vaccination campaign across the country. Australia's state of New South Wales has extended COVID restrictions in its capital, Sydney, and other areas as a Delta outbreak continues to grow there.
New South Wales has said all along, Delta is something we haven't seen before in our country, and we need to make sure we do everything we can to reduce case numbers, but also, of course, that we increase our vaccination rates.
The official added vaccination is key in controlling the outbreak. On Friday, Sydney extended its two-month-old lockdown until the end of September. Residents in virus hotspots will also be subject to a nighttime curfew. COVID cases have been setting record after record in Sydney, with the city now reporting over 600 infections each day. New Zealand is battling a Delta outbreak, too. The authorities say a three-day national lockdown set to end Friday will be extended until Wednesday. The country Tuesday posted its first COVID case in more than 6 months. Infections have now risen to 31. And the UN chief has called humanitarian conditions in Ethiopia hellish as a conflict in the northern region of Tigray drags on and spreads to other parts of the country. Antonio Guterres urged an immediate ceasefire and unrestricted aid access in Tigray, where millions need help. He said it's time for all parties to recognize that there is no military solution. Guterres added preserving the unity and stability of Ethiopia is critical to the region and beyond. Ethiopian government troops and forces loyal to Tigray's leaders have been in war for the control of the region since November last year. Thousands have already been killed and many more displaced. The conflict has escalated in recent weeks as it spread to two neighboring regions of Afar and Amhara. The United States has imposed fresh sanctions against Cuba, citing alleged human rights abuses and detention of protesters. The sanctions target two top defense ministry officials as well as an interior ministry official in charge of prisons in Cuba. The measures freeze any property they have in the United States and blocks Americans from doing business with them. The new sanctions are the fourth round of measures Washington has taken against Cuban officials and entities in recent weeks. Cuba was a scene of protests in July over an ongoing economic crisis. Havana blames the crisis on Washington's embargo and sanctions in place for decades now. Members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria have joined other Muslims worldwide in marking Ashura. Abdanjum Abdullahi filed this report for us from Nigeria.
Members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, dressed in black, marched along major streets beating their chests in mourning over the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, his household, and his loyal companions in Karbala in present-day Iraq. The army of Yazid conducted the massacre in the most brutal manner. Members of the Islamic movement said the Ashura is a time for sorrow, and it's a time for self-reflection when one commits oneself completely to the mourning of Imam Hussein. They said commemorating the martyrdom in Karbala signifies the ultimate prize in the pursuit of justice and righteousness.
The Ashura teaching, it teaches us to be, at least to be honest in all our believing, to be to commit all our faith to Almighty Allah. We should not fear any creator in this earth. If we want to fulfill our promise to be a good Muslim or to practice the religion of our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and his descendants the way it is.
According to the Islamic movement, the Ashura processions were conducted peacefully in many Nigerian cities. However, they said two people were killed in the northwestern Nigerian state of Sokoto, where the Nigeria police attacked the procession with live rounds. Danjuma Abdullahi, Suleja.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Here at IRIB English Radio, we would like to extend and express our condolences to our listeners for the martyrdom of the third Imam, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Today we are going to be speaking about the ziyarat of Ashura, the visitation of Ashura, in which we pay homage to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. There's many questions surrounding this ziyarat, many misgivings regarding it, many doubts regarding it. One of the questions that's often asked regarding this ziyarat is this. In this ziyarat, we see that the enemies of the Prophet's household and in general, and Imam Hussein in particular, as well as those individuals who took part in the event of Karbala, are cursed by the Imam. However, we see that a specific person, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, this person has been cursed twice in this ziyarat, towards the end of the ziyarat. So a question arises, a question is often asked, why is it that this person has been singled out and distinguished out of the from amongst the enemies of the family of the Prophet and has been cursed twice? There are many answers have been given to this question by the people who have written commentaries on the Ziyarat-e Ashura. We can mention two of these answers here. One of them is that this person played a significant role in the crimes committed in Karbala and on the day of Ashura, and his the role that he played in this event was far more significant than that of the others. This is one of the reasons which has been mentioned for his being cursed twice and his being singled out from amongst the enemies of the family of the Prophet and cursed twice in the ziyarat. Another reason that has been mentioned is that in reality, this person has only been cursed once, just like all of the other enemies of the Prophet and his household. However, this person has been mentioned with two names. In other words, we refer to him as Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad and also as Ibn Marjana. In effect, why are we doing this? Because this person, Islamic history tells us that this person was a was born out of the result of fornication, and his real father, because of this, was not known. So some people relate him to Ibn Ziyad, and some of them relate him to Ziyad, some of them to Marjana. Or some of them relate him to Ziyad, and some of them to Abu Sufyan. So the reason why we mention him twice is not because we want to curse him twice, but we refer to him in two ways, so that we are reminded that this person was a bastard, and his birth was the result of fornication, and his real father was not known. These are two answers that have been given to this question. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at some of the dimensions of the Ziyarat of Ashura. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Land of the free. The United States dubs itself as the land of the free. The term is used in the country's national anthem. The term freedom is used often in American politics. So often that many people think of it as their own trademark. Former U.S. President George W. Bush once famously stated that our enemies attack us because they hate our freedoms.
Americans are asking, why do they hate us? They hate what they see right here in this chamber, a democratically elected government. Their leaders are self-appointed. They hate our freedoms.
But is America really the land of the free?
The United States has more people in prison than anywhere else in the world.
They cannot rehabilitate on the inside like this, where there's drugs all around and there's violence all around, and they feel that there's not a true kind of system of guard oversight.
Solitary is probably the most cruel and vicious non-physical form of torture that a human being can inflict upon another human being.
Over the past 40 years, the number of people held in prisons and jails in the United States per capita has more than quadrupled, with the total number of people incarcerated now surpassing 2.3 million. Since 1970, the U.S. prison population has risen 700%, a rate that far outpaces that of general U.S. population and crime rates. Every state and the federal government has seen a massive increase in inmate populations in recent decades. Currently, one in 99 adults are living behind bars in the United States, and one in 31 adults are under some form of correctional control, such as prison, jail, parole, or probation. Not only do U.S. prisons and jails host more than 2.3 million prisoners, but at least 4.9 million people are arrested and jailed each year, and at least one in four of those individuals are booked into jail more than once during the same year. These people are pre-trial detainees, some of whom are granted bail, while others simply cannot afford it, or judges refuse to grant bail. So the number of people going to jail on any given day is a lot higher than what the official statistics show.
If prisons were to declare themselves as a singular city, they would be the third largest in the entirety of the United States. Since the massive influx of prisoners since the 1980s, the prison facilities have had a large strain on their current resources, such as employment, adequate security, and health care.
The country that calls itself the land of the free has by far the biggest prison system in the world, and mass incarceration has negatively affected millions of families in the United States, especially the underprivileged, African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans, and other minorities. Here with us is our first guest, Mr. Ramiro Funes, who is a political journalist, activist, and political commentator. Why does the United States, that describes itself as the land of the free, possess the highest number of prisoners in the world?
The irony about the U.S. claiming itself as the land of the free and the home of the brave, even though it has the highest imprisoned population in the world, is astounding, and the world community, the international community, sees it for what it is, as a lie, as a farce.
Prison not only affects the prisoners, but also the prisoners' family and community. According to a study by Cornell University, nearly 45% of Americans have a close relative who has spent time in jail. This figure is higher for African Americans. 63% of African Americans have a close relative who has spent time in jail. Joining us now is Kristen Harris, a journalist, political analyst, and a host of the Rundown Live radio show. What is the effect of mass incarcerations on U.S. families?
Well, I mean, incarceration takes on an immeasurable amount of damage on communities. A lot of these people don't belong in jail. They're victimless crimes. They're not really hurting anyone. There's no real victim in it. And they're going and spending time in jail instead of trying to take care of their children or being with the family or contributing towards society. They become a tax burden on it. But I think it's huge. It's huge. It affects the communities. We have a epidemic of children without, you know, parental figures. And if they don't have parental figures, who is it that becomes their parent? The state, the government. The government becomes your children's parents.
The demographics of the prison population shows blatant racism, where African Americans are incarcerated at more than five times the rate of whites. It does not stop there. African Americans are also sentenced longer when committing the same crime as whites.
While a majority of the United States is Caucasian, Black Americans are incarcerated at five times the rate that whites are. This massive disparity in incarceration have led many to come to the conclusion that the prison industry is a leftover product of slavery.
the roots of the disparity between the imprisonment of Black people in the United States and white people in the United States is largely due to the foundations of capitalism in the United States. Capitalism in the United States was born on racism, on slavery.
One of the laws that resulted in the arrest of many African Americans was the 1994 Crimes Bill, sponsored by Joe Biden and signed by then President Bill Clinton. This bill strengthened the Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1986, which created vast inequalities in sentencing between crack and powder cocaine. Under this bill, there was a mandatory minimum sentence for a person with 5 grams of crack cocaine, but for someone to receive a 5-year sentence, that person would have to be in possession of 500 grams of powder cocaine, which is essentially the same drug.
The war on drugs has been a failure here in the United States, and majority of these people that go to jail for drug use are victimless crimes. And if there's no victim, is it a crime? We need to ask ourselves that. So they go to these prisons where it's really just criminal college, and when they get out, they learn how to do real crimes.
Now, crack cocaine was mostly used by African Americans, while powder cocaine was mostly used by whites. Since crack cocaine is a cheaper substitute for powder cocaine, it is more prominent in low-income neighborhoods. These neighborhoods are more likely to be predominantly Black and in urban areas that can be over-policed more easily than suburban or rural areas.
It's no secret that Blacks and minorities are disproportionately put in jail by the judiciary system. And that's what people mean by systematic racism. Why is it that we elect and re-elect these individuals and allow these laws on the books? Do people belong in jail for doing drugs when they don't hurt anyone? Do they belong in jail next to murderers and rapists? That's a question that your local people need to ask themselves, or the local community needs to ask themselves.
According to the civil rights organization, NAACP, one out of every 3 Black boys born today can expect to be sentenced to prison, compared to 1 out of 6 Latino boys and 1 out of 17 white boys.
The rise of this empire known as the U.S., we've witnessed the enslavement of African people, the extermination of indigenous peoples. This country, or this empire rather, was born in blood and born in imprisonment and slavery, and it's part and parcel of its identity as a corporation that claims to be a nation or a country. And that's the irony about the U.S. calling itself the land of the free, because since its inception in 1776, it has not been so for the vast majority of people, only for the wealthy white landowning elites.
The United States Sentencing Commission states that Black male offenders receive sentences on average 20.4% longer than similarly situated white male offenders. The U.S. spends more than $80 billion each year for keeping millions of people behind bars. This comes from taxpayer money and is besides the expenses families have to endure for their incarcerated loved ones. The Prison Policy Initiative, an organization working to reduce mass incarceration, estimates that families spend $2.9 billion a year on commissary accounts and phone calls.
I think that, like I mentioned, it was a $5 billion industry for private prisons. And I think it's, is the government the answer? I'm not sure. I think that having mandates that require 80% incarceration, otherwise they shut the prison down, that's dangerous. That forces a judge to put in an illegitimate verdict and puts people in jail that probably don't deserve to be there. So I think private prisons, there is restructuring that needs to be done, and if it's not profitable, maybe they should just get out of it.
Millions of released prisoners have lost their right to vote, will have a hard time finding jobs, and have probation restrictions for years after their release, which in many cases will result in returning to prison. Why there are so many people locked up in the United States?
In 2019, according to the Department of Justice, we had over 119,000 prisoners in jail in for-profit prisons. That means that they make money based on the incarceration rate. And sometimes, in some states, they have mandatory incarceration rates where they must keep the prisons over 80% filled or they shut down. What kind of honest justice system would put people in jail just to keep the prisons open? It kind of forces the judge to make a very dishonest decision in court cases.
Jails and prisons in the United States are not, as they called, correctional institutions. Rehabilitation very rarely occurs, and according to official statistics, 83% of released prisoners are arrested within 9 years. This is while almost 70% are arrested within 3 years of their release from incarceration.
One of the main sectors of society that are benefiting from mass incarceration from the prison industrial complex are the Republican right-wing conservatives, the neoconservatives, the Zionist faction that are backed by Israel, that are backed by the security forces, by U.S. intelligence, by Israeli intelligence. They want perpetual oppression. They make money every time someone is locked up, because the more people are locked up, the more people are in prisons, the more resources have to be doled out to those prisoners, and the larger these corporations grow. We have the Corrections Corporation of America, for example, the CCA, one of the largest in the country, that is billions and billions and billions of dollars richer with the more people that they lock up.
In many facilities, basic items are sold by private vendors, often with substantial markups or added service fees. Over the years, the cost to families has increased as prisons and jails across the country increasingly outsource many of the basic functions of running a correctional facility to private companies.
The CCA is one of the biggest supporters of the Republican, the neoconservatives, who also participate in creating prisons and walls and drones that oppress Palestinians on Palestinian land by Israeli security and by the IDF. And there's a deep interconnection between the prison industrial complex funded by the neocons, Zionists, and by the military industrial complex like Boeing, like Raytheon, that makes money from perpetual war, because these are corporations that have made an entire institution and sector of the economy based around slavery, imprisonment, and perpetual conflict.
There are also many private for-profit prisons that actually make more money when more people are incarcerated.
All I know is that the prison industrial complex, there's a lot of people that own these private things. Some of them are surprising movie star names, and I dare not say name them because I don't know if they still own it or if they've sold it. But there's people that are wealthy that own these prisons, and do they have the best interest in humanity? Should we be looking at things like rehabilitation? And yes, it's a waste of money to keep a lot of these people in prison that don't deserve to be there.
To top the misery of inmates, COVID-19 hit prisons hard across the globe. While U.S. officials were demanding that other countries release prisoners because of the COVID-19 outbreak, they did very little to control the virus in their own country.
We cannot get away from each other. Look in the background. You see all of this? This is crazy. We just waiting to die in here. We just sitting ducks in here waiting to die. We cannot get away from each other at all.
Even though the U.S. Attorney General at the time, William Barr, instructed prison officials and the Justice Department to try and send eligible federal inmates to home confinement, only a small percentage went home under GPS.
It's just another example of how this country, the system, does not view them as human beings. It sees them as a nuisance, as a way to make money or a way to lose money. And in this case, for prisoners, when they're no longer able to work for them as slaves, they want to get rid of them.
Interestingly, among those released were Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, and his ex-lawyer, Michael Cohen. Another aspect of United States jails and prisons is the excessive use of solitary confinement. the psychological distress that has been connected with long periods in solitary confinement are so well established that the United States defines solitary confinement beyond 15 days as torture.
Imagine being locked in a prison cell.
I can't tell you how long I laid there, you know. It seemed like an eternity.
6 foot by nine, for 23 hours a day.
I wake up soaking wet, sweating sometime.
For decade after decade.
I just feel as though you're being squeezed to death.
Now imagine doing all of that alone. It is a reality for tens of thousands of prisoners in America, where solitary confinement is common.
In the United States, an estimated 80,000 people are held in some form of isolation on any given day. And in a single year, over 10,000 people were released to the community directly from solitary confinement. A two-year-old Yale Law School study found that more than 4,000 mentally ill inmates are held in solitary confinement in the country. In Louisiana, almost one in five prisoners continue to be held in solitary confinement. Louisiana had the dubious distinction of being home to the longest-standing isolation prisoner in America, Albert Woodfox, who was released in 2016, having served 43 years entirely alone in a concrete cell measuring 6 foot by 9 foot.
I was placed in long-term solitary confinement from age 15 during the George H.W. Bush administration until Obama took office for 18 consecutive years.
The amount of time spent in isolation also remains at crisis point. The study found that almost 2,000 prisoners have been held in segregation for more than 6 years.
It was poetry that kept me alive and going. It was excruciating watching people being gassed with high-powered chemical agents, prisoners being beaten by staff, the nurses would watch it and falsify reports. It was one of the most horrendous experiences. No human being should have to live through what I went through. As I told you during a radio interview, if what happened to George Floyd happened during broad daylight, imagine what's going on behind those closed prison walls when no one's watching and there's no camera.
What we mostly presented to you in this program was statistics and numbers, but numbers hide what these millions of people go through every day. It is impossible to imagine what it is like not to see sunlight or feel fresh air for year after year. It is impossible to know what it feels like when your loved one dies and you're not allowed to attend their funeral.
In my head, I just say, I know I'm going to get out. I know I don't deserve to be in here, so I just don't feel like I'm going to be in here the rest of my life. I don't think it's possible. In my head, something just say, I'm going to get out. I know I'm going to get out.
I cannot believe that all of these young men that's in the justice system, that's in prison, I do not believe that all of them should be there. And I believe that there is something that could have been done to make their lives more successful.
On this episode of We the People, I'm joined by Kim Smith. Kim is an outside liaison with Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to jump right in. I know you all are quite busy this month. You've been organizing in prisons across the country for years in an effort to move beyond this violent and punitive carceral system and towards a more humane and rehabilitative model. Now, one of the key demands you're organizing behind is the implementation of, quote, non-reformist reforms. So can you tell us, Kim, what do you all see as some of the steps that U.S. lawmakers could take to end mass incarceration and actually help those who are released to return to a normal and stable life?
Well, Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, first of all, is a national organization. It's comprised of people incarcerated who are organizing to help people incarcerated gain basically human rights, so access to legal education, resources, and all different types of assistance. And some of the major things that people can, like lawmakers and legislators can do is make sure, one, that people incarcerated have access to rehabilitative services. Here in South Carolina, at Turpinville Correctional Facility, one of the main demands is letting people incarcerated have access to rehabilitative services. That's one way to help people not go back into jail, if you give them proper rehabilitative services. So when they come out, you know, they won't have to do whatever they did to get incarcerated or anything like that. And another thing is, we really need to get rid of, and one of the main demands of Jailhouse Lawyers Speak is the truth in sentencing, where 85% of your sentence must be served before you're eligible for parole. How you're keeping people incarcerated, you're not even letting people out, you're not giving them access to services. So if we want to move from a carceral state, we have to let people out. We have to let people take parole. It's ridiculous that that your charges can only carry 20 years maximum, and 85% of that must be served. I mean, it's ridiculous. And we have to start by get rid of the racist parole board and actually let these people out of prison. Most of the acts, again, is like get rid of the Truth in Sentencing Act and gang enforcement laws and things like that. And also, one major thing is get rid of the repeal of the 13th Amendment, or repeal the 94 crime bill, rather. The 94 crime bill is the reason that we have this mass incarceration boom, and that bill needs to be struck from the records and taken out, because it's the reason so many black and brown people are being incarcerated. I think that one of the main things that I want to add is that people incarcerated with Jailhouse Lawyers Speak are really organizing for the human rights, and it's really up to people that aren't incarcerated to really pay attention to the prison system in your own state and city, and know what people inside are organizing around. You know, these are people who are fighting for basic human rights, so we need to be plugged in, and we need to know what's going on in the facilities in this country.
Definitely. But we want to thank you so much, Kim, for joining us. We want to thank viewers at home for tuning in. For Press TV's We the People in Washington, D.C., I'm Wyatt Reed. Take care.
Numbers and statistics, of course, hide shattered lives. They cannot show broken bonds and broken families, or lost minds and crushed dignities. United States prisons are institutions that make money out of people's miseries. The more people suffer, the more these institutions are successful. In this system, hope and faith is the last rope a captive can cling on to.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.